Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
TikTok is in the news every day in dozens of ways. The app continues to grow in popularity, causing big tech giants to scramble and try to catch up, coming out with copycat features. TikTok is a business story, it's a cultural story, an entertainment story, and also very much a geopolitical story, with lots of questions and concerns about its Chinese owner, ByteDance. So what is the status of TikTok? What does the company know about its users? What might Chinese officials do with that data? Those are a few of the questions for this week's Reliable Sources podcast. So let's cue the music. I'm Brian Stelter, and this weekly podcast is our chance to go in depth with media leaders and newsmakers, exploring how the media world really works. And right now, TikTok is reinventing media, changing the way untold millions of people consume entertainment and sometimes news. And that's keeping reporters like Emily Baker White very busy. She's been on the tech beat for BuzzFeed, writing about TikTok's owner, ByteDance, and the ways that this Chinese company is trying to wall off American user data in order to make sure that American regulators and lawmakers don't try to shut down TikTok in the U.S. altogether. Emily's most recent story is titled, TikTok owner ByteDance used a news app on millions of phones to push pro-China messages, ex-employees say. ByteDance says it did no such thing. But Emily's been breaking news on this beat for months now, exploring what ByteDance does and doesn't do with TikTok. Amid all those concerns from U.S. lawmakers and officials about TikTok as a form of China's soft power. There's a lot to this story, and Emily's actually between jobs right now. She's left BuzzFeed. She's about to start a new job at Forbes. She also, full disclosure, previously held policy positions at Facebook and Spotify. So I asked her to join me to talk through her scoops and what she's learned from ex-employees. So let's get to it. Emily, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks so much for having me.
I have learned a lot from your reporting about TikTok. I was hoping you could take us back to your beginning covering this story, covering this beat. What first intrigued you about this app and its ownership? Where does the story start for you?
You know, honestly, it's kind of a boring answer. TikTok got really big, really fast in the U.S. And I think I looked around and saw a lot of people reporting on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, and I felt like we weren't talking as much about TikTok and TikTok policy in the sort of way that we were talking about other big tech companies. And I was super curious to sort of dive into that. And so I started talking to people who worked at the company, who had worked at the company, and sort of learning what the major discussions happening internally were.
Mm-hmm. Were you using TikTok personally and feeling intrigued by it, or not so much?
I have used TikTok. I've never used it that much. but I was more interested in it from a policy angle than I was due to my own usage.
Yeah, yeah. I definitely think it's true that some reporters have belatedly arrived at the TikTok story, and I might be one of those, in terms of it being underappreciated, its scale and its popularity. And maybe that's just because a lot of journalists like to use Twitter and yell at each other on Twitter and Facebook. I don't know.
I'm guilty of spending too much time on Twitter as well.
So what was your first TikTok story that broke through?
My first TikTok story was about a project called Project Texas, which is TikTok's big effort to try to wall off or segregate some amount of U.S. user data that they consider to be protected or private from some ByteDance staff in China. ByteDance, of course, is TikTok's parent company and the company that owns and controls TikTok. So Project Texas is it's sort of a first of its kind initiative for a big tech company saying, we recognize that there is data that we don't want all of our people worldwide to have access to. And so we're going to try to make sure that that data is, first of all, housed within the United States, but also is only accessible to some number of people who are approved by a US-based team. Mm-hmm. And that's an interesting idea. But what I learned about Project Texas, the more people I talked to and the more I sort of, you know, dug into the company, is just how hard that is. And it's hard intellectually because just figuring out whose data is whose is actually complicated. Imagine a DM between someone in the US and someone in Europe, right? Should that be in the Europe data section or the US data section? We're not exactly sure, right? And so there are a lot of tough choices that the company has to make about how they want to segregate this data. The other problem, though, is that TikTok is built on ByteDance infrastructure that was built in China. And these big tech companies have so many internal systems, the systems that their advertisers use, the systems that their, you know, data scientists use to understand what products are popular this week. There are dozens and dozens of these internal tools, and they were all built in China, and they're all managed from China right now. And so the idea of closing off every potential avenue for this sensitive data to get out of the United States to China or somewhere else internationally is really, I think, a lot harder than the company first realized when they said, okay, this is what we're going to do.
Now, how much of this is rooted in then-President Donald Trump's orders against ByteDance in 2020, back when he was still in office, he basically threatened to shut down TikTok in the U.S., and there was this big battle back then.
Yeah, so I think a lot of this stems from there, and I would say it's not just former President Trump's actions, but before former President Trump started talking about TikTok, the Committee for Foreign Investment in the U.S., which is under the Commerce Department, began sort of investigating ByteDance's acquisition of an app called Musical.ly, which later became TikTok. And so the U.S. government had been looking at whether there was a potential national security risk even before Trump started talking about it. And so I think the reason that ByteDance wants to do this is because they don't want to lose a very lucrative market. They did lose a very lucrative market in India when India banned TikTok, right? And they don't want that to happen here or anywhere else because, frankly, there's way too much money on the line.
So tell us about the profits, because let me, you know, play one of TikTok's fiercest critics, you know, some of these GOP lawmakers in the U.S. Is it about profits for TikTok or is it about propaganda?
So that's a great question. And I think we're never going to have full visibility into why any person does what they do, right?
But or any company or anything. Yeah.
I think one really important thing is that we've learned at Facebook, at YouTube, here at TikTok, that often content that performs really well, that drives engagement, that drives clicks, is not the most accurate or comprehensive or contextualized news out there, right? This isn't news anymore, that sometimes scammy, inaccurate content does really well. And we've seen sort of battles at Facebook, at YouTube, and elsewhere about how companies have dealt with the fact that the most profitable content is often not great for society. At TikTok, there's just another layer to that, which is this is the first company that has had sort of the smash hit popularity that we've seen from a Facebook or a YouTube in the US that isn't based in the US. And so all of our sort of fears about the fake news or hyperpartisan content on a Facebook or a YouTube just have like one more layer of skepticism now on TikTok because because it is, you know, run by a company that's based in China.
Right. So you just hit on the big picture point here, which is it is the first one of its kind. It's become this incredible hit that's an addiction for hundreds of millions of people that's coming from China. Do you think, but to put shoes on the other feet for a moment, have regulators, officials in India and China and Brazil gone through exactly the same sets of emotions or concerns about Facebook and Twitter and Google that U.S. officials have gone through with TikTok? Do you see what I'm getting at?
I do see what you're getting at. I haven't talked to those people, but I think your bigger point is right, which is that this is the first time for us that a foreign app has had this sort of popularity. For everybody else, they've been wondering whether, you know, these U.S. countries might prioritize or privilege U.S. interests in the app, right? And so I think, you know, we live in the United States. We have a United States-centric, you know, view whether we try to or not. But I think what we're learning is the geography of where these companies are based does matter. And we're a little late to the game because all of the other apps that have been this popular have been homegrown so far.
Mm-hmm. So all of the issues with the Trump administration, the threats to blockade, Biden basically unwound that when he took office in 2021. Is that right? So bottom line is, despite what the Trump administration was saying, ByteDance still owns TikTok and still owns it the same way it did before.
ByteDance does still own TikTok and own it the way it did before. I know that the companies want to increase separation between them, but TikTok is still owned by ByteDance. So
Project Texas changed. Project Texas was an attempt to silo off American data and keep it in America. But as you said, that's really complicated because people are interacting with each other all around the world, and where does one start and the other end, et cetera.
Yeah, and the other thing is, TikTok has said over the past year, they've said frequently and loudly that all U.S. data is housed in the United States. And that's not really, in my mind, the right question to be asking, because I don't know where my emails are housed, actually, and I don't care because I can check my email from here or from anywhere else I am on the globe, right? And so certainly where the data is physically stored is one relevant fact, but I think who has access to the data, where those people are, and what sort of restrictions go into deciding whether and when they have access to data is a far more important thing to interrogate.
And that's what leads us to your story from June titled "Leaked Audio from 80 Internal TikTok Meetings Shows That U.S. User Data Has Been Repeatedly Accessed from China." This is the story, I believe you all called it the TikTok tapes, that caused even more pressure from U.S. government officials, from lawmakers. A TikTok executive ended up coming on CNN with me to respond to some of this, and we can get into that in a little bit. But give us the summary of your scoop from June about what was going on in these internal meetings.
Yeah, so the audio, which of course was very long and very detailed.
Boring? Was it mostly boring?
I didn't find it boring.
Oh, okay. I thought you were about to say boring.
There were parts of it that were more newsworthy and parts of it that were less newsworthy.
Okay.
It's true with any bulk material of that size. I thought it was fascinating. And it taught me a lot about sort of TikTok and TikTok's inner workings beyond what was in the story too. But I think mainly what it showed, it confirmed our prior report, right, about what Project Texas is, what it's trying to do. Most of the meetings that were shared with me, the audio of those meetings were about Project Texas in some sense, right? And I think really the biggest takeaway there was just how difficult it has been for the company to actually try to close off this data. And as I sort of said earlier in this chat, the problem is really all of these internal ways that data moves around. And none of that is necessarily nefarious. It's just how companies of this size have to work. The HR pipeline is different from the scheduling pipeline, is different from the advertising pipeline, is different from the internal monetization pipeline. There are just so many internal tools, and they're all sending data around all the time. And they were not created with the idea that data should be limited to a small number of people or, you know, to people on certain teams or in certain geographies. And so having to go back and restructure all of those things, I just think the company didn't realize how many things it would have to restructure in order to actually achieve this.
I'm listening to you and I'm picturing like a giant plate of spaghetti that's twisted up in every single direction because that's how it's made. And now the diner says, I want you to try to unwind every single spaghetti piece. And it sounds impossible. Or it sounds, rather than impossible, it sounds impractical.
I think that's right. And I think the company is trying to do it. They're putting a huge number of resources and a huge amount of staff time and a huge number of teams on trying to do this, right? They're clearly trying to do it.
Because why? Because they don't want to mess up their American profit machine, right?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's the amount of time that people spend on the TikTok app in the United States translates to advertising dollars.
Yeah.
And the company wants those advertising dollars and it wants the, you know, the incredible engagement that it's getting here and all around the world.
So your reporting described the possibility of accessing U.S. user data like phone numbers and birthdays. What would the consequence be of an engineer in China knowing my birth date?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. I think there are some people who would say not that much, right? And some experts that I've talked to point out that if an engineer in China wants to know your birthday that badly, they can probably buy it from a data broker somewhere. And so I think Ezra Klein sort of had a smart way of thinking about the various risks of TikTok. Basically, what he was saying was that if the Chinese government really wanted information about a person, they could use TikTok to get that information. They could use TikTok to get your birthday or maybe your phone number, maybe even some draft TikToks that you made and never published, things like that. But he also said that there was a different concern, which has to do with the scale of TikTok and the way that it sort of can influence the American populace on a broader level. And I think that's the more interesting thing here. If anyone really wants to know your birthday, TikTok probably isn't the most efficient way to get there and they can get it elsewhere. But if someone wants to understand trends in American media consumption, TikTok is a great way to get that, arguably a way that you can't get it anywhere else.
It's the quote from Ted Cruz that's going around, which is, TikTok's a Trojan horse, he says, the Chinese Communist Party can use to influence what Americans see, hear, and ultimately think. It's a form of soft power. And he has made the claim that that's the real threat. And you've heard that from other GOP lawmakers and frankly, not just Republicans in the U.S. This has been circulating for some time. And yet, let me just add the asterisk, it's July of 2022, nothing actually changed. TikTok's only become more popular in the U.S.
Absolutely. And I think we know that these platforms have this power, right? We know that Facebook influences elections. We know that Twitter can influence elections. And when you had TikTok exec Michael Beckerman on your show a few weeks ago, you asked him whether we should be concerned that TikTok could affect Americans' cultural political understandings or whether it could influence elections. He said he wasn't worried about that because he said, we're not the go-to place for politics. And respectfully, that's just wrong. For millions of Americans, TikTok is the go-to place for politics.
Yeah, I thought that was a kind of a weaselly, well, he kept saying, we're about entertainment. We're about entertainment. And I think I pushed back and like, no, actually, you're a lot of things to a lot of different people.
Yeah.
And yet, to some people, you're an entertaining product, to many people. But it's not just that.
Yeah. There have been a couple stories recently. One was in BuzzFeed News about, especially for some groups of people, TikTok is replacing Google. People don't Google things. They TikTok them now. And when you're the primary social media platform for a generation, the primary source of information, you can't say it's just all cat videos and dance routines. And when you do, you're abdicating responsibility for what those people are seeing and what they are learning and how your platform is changing their behavior.
Mm. Here's Scott Galloway, certainly a prominent tech writer and critic, saying the tip of China's propaganda spear is TikTok. which has a direct connection to the midbrain of a billion people, including nearly every U.S. teenager and half their parents. He said Facebook is the most powerful espionage vehicle ever created, and now China commands the most powerful propaganda tool. So I just share that to say, you know, some of this is beyond the realm of partisan politics and Trump versus Biden. It's also just it's tech experts looking at this and saying they've built an incredibly powerful machine and it deserves a lot of scrutiny. So, Emily, when you do scrutinize this, when you've been writing your stories for BuzzFeed, how has TikTok responded? Have they engaged with the substance of these questions with you?
I wish they would engage more. I do want to say that my latest piece, which we haven't totally gotten into, that's the one about Top Buzz, the news app that ByteDance ran from 2015 to 2020. In that story, we wrote that former employees who worked on the app told me that staff were required to post and promote positive content about China and censor negative content about China. ByteDance responded to that, and they said that posting and promoting positive content about China did not happen. And that's the first time that ByteDance has come back and told me that something that I reported didn't happen, is simply wrong. That's really interesting. Four credible former employees told me it did happen. The company says it didn't happen. You know, that's newsworthy.
Do you think the company just doesn't know what the employees were doing?
I do think institutional knowledge is a challenge, especially for a company that has grown at this size. And so, when we send a company a request for comment and we tell them all of the things that we're planning on publishing, they then, whoever receives that message on the other side, the corporate comms person has to go in and ask a bunch of people, okay, is this true? How did this go down? What happened here?
Yeah.
It seems that the comms people did that and said, this never happened. Maybe if they'd asked other people, they would have gotten a different answer. I don't know.
Interesting question.
But yeah, that's a good question.
So your headline on the most recent article, TikTok owner ByteDance used a news app on millions of phones to push pro-China messages, ex-employees say. So these ex-employees speaking with you, they were all anonymous, right?
They were all anonymous.
Why'd they need to be anonymous?
I think they fear retribution from ByteDance or maybe even from the Chinese government.
And you had several employees talking about this. And then more broadly, interviews with 15 former ByteDance employees who worked on Top Buzz also suggest efforts to censor content critical of the Chinese government. So you had a large number of sources here for this story. What exactly was Top Buzz and why did it go away?
Top Buzz was a news app, sort of like a Google News or an Apple News, but with an important caveat that people could also post their own news content. So it was like Apple News or Google News with a sprinkling of the sort of user-generated content of a Facebook or a Twitter. That left it susceptible, like a Facebook and a Twitter, to a lot of fake news problems, a lot of sort of spammy, hyper-partisan content problems. And we write about that in the piece, but in essence, Top Buzz was the internationalized version, the English language version of ByteDance's other most popular Chinese app. ByteDance's two most popular mainland China apps are Douyin, which is the Chinese version of TikTok, and Tutiao, which is the Chinese version of Top Buzz. Naturally, the company, you know, ByteDance wanted to expand internationally. They wanted to take some of the success that they'd seen in China and ship it out elsewhere and sort of maximize what they were able to do. And so they took both of these apps and rolled out international versions of them. Mm-hmm. TikTok ended up doing better in the US than Top Buzz. But some sources believe, and it sort of makes sense to me why they would believe, that the sort of line that ByteDance has had to walk with potential regulation of TikTok because of national security concerns, that would have just been so much worse with a news app, right? The idea that a Chinese company might want to influence the way we're consuming information is bad enough when there are a lot of cat videos and dance videos. Right. If this is supposed to be news, it's just, you know, the whole thing is ratcheted up.
Right. Clearly, a lot of people were willing to talk to you. And we talked about the reasons why they insisted on anonymity. But why do you think these ex-employees are willing to talk?
I think they felt weird about it at the time, and they feel weirder about it now, knowing the power that ByteDance has now sort of amassed through TikTok in the US. This is true of a lot of people that I've talked to who used to work at ByteDance on Top Buzz or anything else. People who worked at ByteDance 3, 4, 5 years ago were working at a relatively insignificant, small Chinese startup in the US. Now they were working for the TikTok parent company. And I think a lot of people sort of look at that and say, wow, all of the interesting little quirky experiences I had working at this company, all of a sudden now might say something bigger and more important about an app that has profound effects on our society.
There's a lot more to talk about, so let's get a quick break here and more with Emily Baker White in just a moment.
This podcast is supported by Sleep Number. Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores? Sleep Number does that. Only Sleep Number Smart Beds let you each choose your ideal comfort and support, your Sleep Number setting. Sleep Number Smart Beds learn how you sleep and provide personalized insights to help you sleep better. All Sleep Number smart beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. Temperature-balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
I'm Dr. Sanjay Gupta, CNN's chief medical correspondent. This week on Chasing Life...
I'm sorry that the Great Barrier Reef is no longer great, that we value Amazon much more than the Amazon, and that the waterfront neighborhood where you were growing up could be condemned by rising seas before you're old enough to apply for a mortgage.
That's my friend Bill Weir, CNN's chief climate correspondent. He's optimistic about the planet, and he's optimistic about our ability to take care of it. Listen to Chasing Life wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back here on the Reliable Sources podcast. I'm Brian Stelter, speaking with Emily Baker White about her reporting on all things TikTok. And Emily, I mentioned in the intro, you're a contributor now to BuzzFeed News. You're about to start a new job at Forbes. Tell me about just that. This is kind of an unusual situation. A lot of folks have left BuzzFeed. There's been an exodus to Forbes and elsewhere. But you've still been able to stay on the TikTok beat for BuzzFeed, even after leaving your full-time job there. Is that right? Kind of unusual.
That is right. You know, there was a gap in... You know, like a lot of people, I took a little time between jobs, but this was a really important story, and I wanted to get it out, and BuzzFeed thought it was a really important story and wanted to get it out, and so we made that happen.
That's great. So that's the most recent one about this news app pushing pro-China messages, according to ex-employees. So you're heading to Forbes with a bunch of your former BuzzFeed colleagues. So is it that you're kind of the tech team is setting up shop now over at Forbes?
Certainly a group of us. It's not the whole tech team at BuzzFeed, but some of my colleagues who I of course love and am excited to keep working with are also starting at Forbes.
Yeah. And as we're talking here about TikTok, your stories for BuzzFeed were about a number of big tech companies. I remember one a few months ago about Instagram. You were writing about a report from an advocacy group. The headline was Toxic Pro-Eating Disorder Accounts on Instagram Could be reaching nearly 20 million users. That was according to this advocacy group, Fair Play. But to me, it's an example of how these platforms, whether it's Twitter or Instagram, whether it's TikTok or Snap, they all have unique challenges and issues and problems, but some of the same ones crop up over and over again. For you as a reporter on the beat, do you feel like people just don't learn their lessons?
I'll say a couple.
Is that too loaded a question, Emily?
I'll say a couple things. I think, first of all, we need to ask which people we're talking about. So there are a couple groups of people who could be learning lessons. One is legislators and regulators. And we've seen a lot of concern from the U.S. government, we haven't seen a lot of action. And so law is often a lagging indicator after journalism and certainly after technology. And that's probably good, right? We don't want to like rush to criminalize behavior or regulate behavior before we understand it. So I definitely want regulators and legislators to take the time they need to really figure out how they want to change the game before they do it. That said, they're taking their time figuring out what they want to do. So that's one group of people who should be learning the lessons. Another group of people is the platforms themselves. And I will foreground here, content moderation is really hard. Figuring out exactly where to draw the line about what content should come down, what content should stay up, how you make sure that you're including the stories of people who've suffered from eating disorders while not encouraging other people to, you know, fall into eating disorders. Like, these are tough problems. Yeah. And I have sympathy for the people at platforms who are trying to draw tough lines. That said, I do think, like, all of the conversations that we've had about content quality, content integrity on Facebook, on Instagram, on YouTube, they have a lot of applicability to TikTok. And so, again, I don't think TikTok is all cat videos and dance videos anymore. We know it isn't.
It we is know it's not.
For yeah. all kinds of things. And so TikTok is in the exact same situation as YouTube, Facebook, et cetera, in that they have to be thinking about content is going out to their often young user base and how that's influencing their decisions. And I think, you know, these platforms want success. They want power. They want mass adoption. As soon as they get to mass adoption, all of a sudden they're distributing information to people at a scale where it's just incredibly hard to get it right. And I think there's often a like, be careful what you wish for moment when you get this big, this fast. There are going to be content quality issues.
It makes me wonder what's the next platform that's on the horizon that's going to go through the same you know steps. Like is it Be Real? I don't know. Is it?
I don't know.
Are we going to be having the same conversation a year from now about some other platform?
History suggests there's a decent chance of it.
That we will. That we will. So staying on TikTok, I suspect you're still pursuing stories about this. You certainly talked to a lot of sources for your most recent story. You're not going to give me any previews of what's to come, but what do reporters on this beat need to be thinking about and focusing on? Like, as you know, other reporters maybe belatedly wake up to the TikTok story, what should we be keeping in mind when trying to cover this?
So I think there are a couple things. First of all is TikTok's been under a lot of heat in the past month or two. It's going to be really interesting to see how the company responds to that heat and whether sort of more structural changes occur. One thing I'm really interested in is whether TikTok will try to more intentionally sort of legally separate its entities. They haven't done that. I know that there have been conversations internally about whether they could do that more.
What would that look like? Tell us about that.
Well, I mean, one of the things that I was always struck by about Project Texas is that a lot of the engineers who are working on Project Texas, who are working on this sort of data segregation, working with sensitive US user data, they report into engineers in China. And so to me, the idea that you are going to segregate off these entities sort of falls apart if at the end of the day, somebody's boss is at the other entity. Because whether hard, you must do this or I will fire you, or soft, I notice your performance review's coming up. Could you do a favor for me? Or even implicit, just, you know, asking someone not to notice that, you know, a boss did a certain thing. There are a lot of ways that reporting structure can frustrate the organization's desire to create a separation. And I wonder if they're going to try to fix that problem and change reporting flows and change how much ByteDance is ultimately in control. I know that ByteDance is probably resistant to that, and the Chinese government may be resistant to that, right? Both for potentially political reasons, but also just because you know, this is a smash hit thing that's come out of their country. They want it to stay coming out of their country, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, I wish we could fast forward and know the TikTok story, you know, 3 years from now, because the way that Beckerman, as you said, on Reliable Sources was saying, you know, we're a joyful app, we're an entertainment app, we're a, you know, the way that he talked about TikTok, maybe that is exactly all it will really be seen as for most users, right? Like, there is a difference between what TikTok provides its audience and what, let's say, Twitter does. And so maybe they'll just lean completely in that direction. And we won't ever talk about TikTok as influential in politics. However, you've reminded me during this conversation, we're already there. It already is having these impacts in all sorts of worlds.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think TikTok would love to not influence politics. It could just make lots of money serving people funny stuff that they enjoy, right? Like, I think TikTok, I think ByteDance would love for that to be the case. All of this other stuff is complicated and messy and dangerous, and I don't think they really want to deal with it. But they don't have a choice, because in these social media apps with user-generated content, users are going to talk about all kinds of stuff. And even if TikTok wanted to say, okay, we're just not going to allow politics on the app, defining politics as an inherently political act. Is women's reproductive care political? Are, you know, are guns political? Like, the idea that you can simply walk out of politics and be only entertainment, only all the time. I mean, look at Disney. Even Disney can't do that. And Disney doesn't have to deal with user-generated content. So I think...
That's a great point.
It would be great for TikTok if they could completely and totally avoid politics. It'd be great for a lot of people, but that's not the world we live in.
Be great if I was 10 years younger, but I'm not going to be. Emily Baker White, thank you so much for the conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
And thanks for tuning in for this week's Reliable Sources podcast. We'll see you on television this Sunday, every Sunday, 11 a.m. Eastern time on CNN. And thanks so much for listening.
When you work next level. And when you play next level. And when it's time to sleep, Sleep Number smart beds are designed to embrace your uniqueness, providing you with high-quality sleep every night. Sleep next level. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, the Queen Sleep Number C4 smart bed is only $1,599. Save $300 for a limited time, only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com. Prices higher in Alaska and Hawaii. Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number smart bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.